In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, March 8th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are wrapping up week one of sequestration, and the Federal News Countdown today features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by my guests on the program today. Trey Hodgkin, Senior Vice President of the Global Public Sector Government Affairs at Tech America. Trey, it's great to have you back on the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming in. And Alan Schvatkin is Executive Vice President and Counsel at the Professional Services Council, the only person I know who's got both versions of the word counsel in his official title.
Worked real hard at it and spent a lot of money to get there.
Something to be said for that, and I appreciate both of you gentlemen being on the program today. We start Federal News Countdown where we always do with the third most important federal news story of the week. And, Trey, your choice is from BNA. The headline is White House expects agencies to continue cybersecurity tasks despite budget cuts. And this story is about cyber, obviously, but I guess you could take out the word cybersecurity and just leave that blank. It is the problem that people at agencies have been telling me for a long time. We have to do the whole mission with not all the money.
Correct. And I think the bigger challenge, the undercurrent in this story is that the personnel cuts I think everyone anticipates, the furloughs that'll be coming, means that they'll have to do that mission with 80% of the manpower. So that's where the real challenge is going to come. The funding, in particular around cyber, we're seeing some preservation of cyber funding in the drafts that are moving on Capitol Hill for a continuing resolution. But the real challenge is going to be the people. They were understaffed, and I think given their drive to find cyber skills, I think Alan has a story on some of that in a little bit. Those efforts are going to be diminished and certainly slowed because of this reduction in the workforce.
The continuing resolution is something I want to talk about throughout the course of the program, because as I looked at your stories, each of you, I didn't see any that were devoted particularly to that, and yet it kind of is the backdrop for all of the things that are going on in town right now, and there are a couple elements of it that I think are particularly interesting. All of the players that are involved in cybersecurity also, because it's some of it's DHS, some of it's NIST, some of it's Cyber Command, they'll all be impacted different ways, too, depending how they want to implement their own sequestration strategies, right?
That's true. Of course, if they're wearing a uniform at Cyber Command, for example, they won't be reduced. But if they're in one of the other agencies executing on the executive order, which is the focus of this article, is going to be more of a challenge, but it will still be the mission, and they're going to have to try and do that. I don't know what that means as they roll this out. I think there were a lot of questions before sequestration occurred about how this gets implemented. I think that the pace will simply change here. We'll still have a lot of questions.
You mentioned something, too, that is another underlying issue here, and that's the workforce. And the workforce that the federal government has now for cyber isn't adequate. Everyone agrees about that. And each of us, each of you, Alan and Trey, have talked about this individually, not all together. But this is the whole idea of sequestration and furloughs and all of that doesn't make the federal government a particularly attractive place for a cybersecurity professional to come to work when you could conceivably go to a private sector company that, you know what, if we can't sell our services right now to the federal government or as many services as we'd like, we'll sell them to the healthcare industry or we'll sell them to the retail industry or whatever, because they need cybersecurity services and protection as badly or in some cases worse than the federal government does.
Well, I think it's indicative of the trend we're seeing. The government is becoming, in this climate, a more and more unattractive place to recruit people. And unfortunately, that's been one of the significant challenges we face over the last several years, not just for cyber, but for the other common area that Alan and I share, which is the acquisition workforce. So that's going to be a real problem going forward. We saw during the economic downturn, the government became a sort of a steady place for people to seek employment. There was stability. There were relatively good compensation packages that they were losing or were diminishing numbers in the private world. And now we're seeing sort of the reverse of that.
Trey Hodgkin's third most important federal news story of the week is from BNA. The headline is White House expects agencies to continue cybersecurity tasks despite budget cuts. Alan Shvatkin, your third most important story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is furlough caused financial problems could affect security clearances. And this is really, I think, one of the unintended consequences that people maybe didn't think about a whole lot when we first started talking about furloughs and so on. But this is tremendously significant because it's a kind of a domino effect is what it looks
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. And in fact, in my own margin notes, I had the unintended consequences impact of this.
Great minds think alike.
No doubt about it. Because this has not been talked about. Yet the implications, not this article from the Post talks primarily about government employees, but there are as many contractor employees with security clearances, and the rules are essentially the same. And so the implications of furloughs, lost jobs because of sequestration, because of budget reductions is the same. This is an area that is not well talked about. Both Trey and I have spent a lot of time in this whole area of security clearances and the adjudication standards. To its credit, Eric points out that this should not be a high area of risk, but it's something that employees, whether they be government employees or contractor employees with security clearances or those without who want one, need to be aware of.
The problem that I see here, as you say, he cites that this is not a potentially huge issue. It's just one more thing added to the pile that people in these situations have to worry about.
That's correct. I was going to note that in addition to the people who are experiencing the furlough and the risks of their clearance, the effort that Al and I spent the better part of at least 5 years working on to try and eliminate the backlog in approving clearances and speed up the process is now at risk of being lost because of the diminishment in the workforce and diminishment of the resources they have to execute on that.
And that's both the technology issue as well as the sheer number of people who are adjudicators to review those applications.
Let's take a pause here for a second because, Alan, I think the story is tremendous, and I'm going to develop this next week with some folks who specialize in these kinds of security clearance issues. But before we get too far into this, I mentioned earlier the continuing resolution, and I had just about the opposite ends of the spectrum that you could expect on the program this week. I had Steny Hoyer on, and I had Tom Coburn on. They both said very specifically in almost terms that sounded like guarantees, we're not going to have a shutdown. So that seems to be off the table. Now, I know there's language from Speaker Boehner that made people kind of pause for a little bit yesterday, but it doesn't serve anybody well. Everything that I'm hearing about the bill the Senate is going to introduce on Monday, it makes it sound like it's going to be very similar to H.R. 933, the House bill that you can read about on federalnewsradio.com, only more agencies than just DOD and VA will be able to move money around. Steny said he'd vote for a bill like that. Didn't sound like he was real excited about it, but he said if the choice is shut down or something that looks like that, we'll deal with what we have to deal with. If we get to the end of this month and sequestration has been dealt with, maybe ugly, but has been dealt with, and the agencies can move money around, and we have at least a plan in place for the rest of the fiscal year, does that make a lot of these issues that we're talking about at least easier to deal with, or maybe even in some cases go away? Because at that point, sequestration's off the table for this year, and Congress can really start to work on FY 2014, is what it looks like to me. Am I missing something?
It's not at all clear that sequestration is dealt with in the final resolution on the continuing resolution. The House left it alone. It left it out in their consideration. I suspect the Senate will try to do so, but that's an area of contention. There are lots of areas of contention, even in the methodologies that the House and Senate are considering on the continuing resolution. It would be very nice to get past this set of issues because we've got 6 months left in the federal fiscal year and a lot of activity, a lot of needs for the government for action. They've been hamstrung because of the CR. So that's why we're supporting a prompt resolution for the balance of the fiscal year. It may not happen all by March 27th, but I hope soon.
The reason that I ask about this, Trey, and the reason that I sound excited if I do, is because I have people at agencies all the time now that are saying, you know what, I can deal with whatever the number is. Just give me a number, and let us manage it because we do this every day, and let us get on with our lives. And the prospect of that as this week, as we started to see some of these positions soften and move toward each other, it looked like. The president's meeting with the Senate Republicans at the Jefferson the other night. These all look good, and it's getting some people in agencies excited that maybe we can get out of the mode of governing by crisis.
Well, but to your earlier question, the House bill doesn't undo the cuts from sequestration. It starts appropriating funds at the levels after sequestration. And there, I think the best case we can hope for is that the Senate will try and undo some, but probably be unable to find solutions for all of the billions that were cut. I think that we're going to be faced with the challenge we've been faced with for quite honestly too long, certainly the last 5+ years, where the agency people you're talking to are absolutely correct. They don't have certainty about their funding patterns, and they're unable to manage. And, you know, it was horrible 3 years ago when they had week-long CRs, and I think we had 7 or 8 that year. Mm-hmm. But this situation hasn't been any better, and it's really a perpetuation of what's become an annual process, and we've got to get out of this cycle.
The third most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Alan Shvatkin, is headlined, "Furlough Caused Financial Problems Could Affect Security Clearances." All the stories that we're talking about on this week's Federal News Countdown are linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And back for the second most important federal news story of the week from Alan Shvatkin and Trey Hodgkins next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Drive your kids in the car without them wearing seatbelts, would you? So why leave them unprotected when you're gone? Learn about the latest techniques for maximizing your wealth and protecting your assets for your heirs. Join me, Wayne Zell, for Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm an estate planning attorney with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Each week, we talk about how you can realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. That's Blueprint for Wealth, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 AM.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Hi, this is Dave Gran, founder and president of MilitaryByOwner.com, a leading provider of advertising services and support to military families trying to sell or rent their homes. When looking for a web development company to design our site, we needed a battle-tested winner. Thankfully, we chose AmericanEagle.com. After reviewing many website developers that potentially could build a site for us, what tilted the scales in favor of AmericanEagle.com was their depth of experience and knowledge, 17 years of successful online development. AmericanEagle.com has helped the Military By Owner website to become a leader in the military real estate market. Working with AmericanEagle.com, we've experienced exceptional service and, most importantly, great returns on our investment. For these reasons, we're a proud partner with AmericanEagle.com for all our online needs. I strongly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 703-WEBSITE to learn how they can develop a website solution for you. That's AmericanEagle.com, 703-WEBSITE.
Here's Vaughn Noga, Chief Technology Officer, EPA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility and Government, sponsored by Palo Alto Networks.
We need to develop the infrastructure. We need to secure the environment. We need to develop the applications. And we also need to look at the business processes. I think we've touched upon, we can give you this device and we can enable you, but if you're still looking at the same old business processes, you really haven't done anything to affect to change the organization.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Detecting and stopping today's cyber threats needs solutions that innovate faster than the threats themselves. Don't let your cybersecurity strategy fall behind. Partner with a security vendor who's known for its security innovations. Partner with Palo Alto Networks. They enable federal agencies to stop advanced threats and modern malware from infiltrating networks. Learn today why Palo Alto Networks was named a leader in the Gartner Magic Quadrant for Network Firewalls and is way ahead of traditional security vendors. Download your copy at paloaltonetworks.com.
Remember that executive order to promote diversity and inclusion at agencies? I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, the Office of Personnel Management's Veronica Villalobos tells us what's happened over the past year. And a CDC researcher tells us about food that makes us sick. He spent 10 years cataloging it. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests this week choosing their three most important federal news stories of the week, ranking them in order and coming into the studio to talk about them with me are Trey Hodgkins of Tech America and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. And we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Trey Hodgkins, is from NextGov. The headline is GSA will stop recruiting cloud security testers until the fall. And they have a bunch already lined up, Trey, so it's not like companies that want to go through this process will be experiencing any kind of a delay, it doesn't sound like.
Well, actually, I interpret it to mean something else. We've known that this particular office at GSA was expecting some pretty drastic cuts in the light of sequestration. And the concern that companies have is that they have applications in the pipeline and you have approximately 10 that have been approved and they're not going to accept any more applicants, and it appears they're not going to do more processing of applicants either until apparently the new fiscal year, they say the fall. So companies' concerns are that they've started that process. Is there going to be sufficient resources on the government side to finish the process for them and let them actually get let the investments they've made in FedRAMP be recognized and actually let them get in there and start competing using that accreditation?
Now, how much of this has to do with the pure budget part of it and how much of it has to do with the privatization piece? What is your sense of that?
My sense is that this is mostly the budget. I know that the people that are running these programs are very committed to them. There's widespread government acceptance of the program. There's significant investment by industry. So I don't think the program lacks support. I think the challenge is, the climate we're in.
Now, my colleague Jason Miller reported this week that agencies are a little skeptical still of FedRAMP. It's more of a cultural issue than it is a technical issue. It's just kind of the old government story of we've always done it this way, and doing it a different way is a hard change piece. What do you see when you talk to the companies that are your members, Trey and Alan? Same thing, trying to do that culture change on something big that is as high profile an initiative as cloud is.
Well, you don't really have to change culture. You just have to make sure that those program folks who are standing in the way come over to the right side. This is a good example of we see a lot of places of government where you want to review once and use it many times. Sometimes we'll call that strategic sourcing. Other terms that come across, and so it's really not so much culture as we need to make sure that the program folks understand the value and the depth of the review that's already taking place.
Mm-hmm.
When they see that, I think some of those inhibitions might go away.
Do you think the same thing?
Well, I agree. I think the program is set up to try and drive that change. Again, in the funding challenges we have right now, I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle to get over.
This story says GSA announcing on Tuesday that it won't take any new applications and will not accept any resubmitted applications from rejected applicants either. And that's another wrinkle that I think goes to what you were talking about earlier. If they've already said no, you don't have another chance until much later in the year.
True. So you're actually shut out from getting in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think everyone in the marketplace knows, this is where a significant portion of the tech sector, both commercially and in the government, is going. And so you've got to be able to put your program together as a company, get it submitted, get it approved, and be able to get on the vehicles that are going to be out there in order to compete.
What is your sense, Alan, of how the response has been from the vendor community, from the companies you work with, to the whole FedRAMP process?
There's been a begrudging acceptance of it. Companies have long had relationships, technical relationships with individual agencies, so now having to go into a different standard-setting body, review body, a little challenging for them as well. We're just beginning to develop that track record of what it's going to take to get approved. It's a good example, though, of the importance of once the government, in this case GSA, decides to go down a path, they better be prepared to address it for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And these fits and starts make the FedRAMP program, as good as it could be, a real challenge. If the agencies lose the bubble on that, companies won't go through this process.
The reason that I ask that is because the things that I hear, the rumblings that I hear out of the administration indicate that they like the structure, they like the process, and the administration's proven pretty willing and adept at replicating things that they think work well over and over again in different forms. And so seeing something that looks like FedRAMP that pertains to some other kind of technology at some point wouldn't surprise anybody at this point, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you could look at the other technological challenges, that most of them involve security in some form or another. Mm-hmm. So bring your own device, for example, maybe something where the government can create a test once, use often mechanism. But again, the challenge will be, as Alan noted, if you lose the momentum, if you lose the bubble on this, it's going to be hard to get it back.
Trey Hodgkin's second most important federal news story of the week on the countdown is from NextGov. The headline is GSA will stop recruiting cloud security testers until the fall. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Shvatkin's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week. Next on In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
It's now easier for people with disabilities to be hired by the federal government. They will no longer have to provide a certification of job readiness when applying for a position. That certificate required applicants to submit a written assessment from a medical professional stating that they could perform the duties of a specific job. The form was seen by many as an unneeded barrier to entry. President Obama wants to see agencies hire 100,000 people with disabilities by 2015.
As a new federal employee, do you realize that you can automatically enroll for up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis with WEPA, a nonprofit association that has been serving the federal community since 1943? No medical exam is required. To be eligible, you must be within 365 days of your original federal hire date. Also, do you know that WEPA's premium rates are significantly less than the federal program? Visit waepa.org to learn more. Once again, that's waepa.org.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete, they're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world, your cloud.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIOs' top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword survey, to see the results.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection and we'll prove it to you. Call GovConnection today at 800-800-0019. That's 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Cisco.
Beating birth defects before pregnancy. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Unhealthy habits may cause birth defects in babies during the first 2 months of pregnancy, which is often before a woman realizes she's pregnant. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Stuart Shapira says it's why healthy living is so important to women who could become pregnant. He says good health habits can reduce the risk of some birth defects. Shapira says the habits include not smoking or drinking, working toward or keeping a healthy weight, controlling blood sugar if a woman has diabetes, discussing with health care providers all medications and supplements, and taking 400 micrograms of folic acid each day.
These behaviors should start even before a woman becomes pregnant and continue throughout the pregnancy.
Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Government IT professionals, register today for this year's Management of Change Education and Training event, May 19th through the 21st in Cambridge, Maryland, a short drive from D.C. Management of Change 2013, sponsored by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council, offers CEUs for interactive sessions on innovation, shared services, and information sharing. Learn more and register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Trey Hodgkins of Tech America and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. Alan, your second most important federal news story of the week is from Defense News. The headline is Cybersecurity Bubble Bursting for U.S. Contractors. And then we mentioned during the break that I think we have now officially set the record for most times using the word bubble on the Federal News Countdown. But this is kind of counterintuitive to what folks have been talking about in the defense contracting space for the last couple of years. One line in this story says, quietly over the past few months, several companies have been showing some of their cybersecurity staff the door, part of a growing recognition by the industry that while cyber is growing, it will never reach the scale of aircraft or ship programs. And that's a fair statement. And I just wonder, that seems to be the exact opposite of what people have been saying over the past couple of years.
Well, there's a lot of talk about cyber. It has a lot of different components and aspects to it. But there's it's hard to get your hands on what's there from a budget standpoint. Now, the administration has announced that in the 2013 budget, we can't find cyber. It's embedded in everything else. In 2014, there's an indication that they'll start coming up with at least a special analysis or a way to highlight some of the cyber initiatives. We saw this 10 years ago with Homeland Security. For a while, it was right before, right after 9/11, everybody had a Homeland Security capability. We just couldn't find the work.
Yeah.
Then the government came forward with the budget with some special analysis. I picked the story for another reason. It's a good example of the cross-cutting issues we talked about already on workforce. I mean, there are critical needs for high skills capabilities, and both government actions as well as contractor needs in the workforce. There's lots of things that are standing in the way of even achieving the balance we want. Layer on top of that sequestration and the budget reductions. A hiring freeze means the government is not going to be able to attract the thousands of cybersecurity experts that they say they need.
Trey, you and your organization have a firsthand seat here. This story says Tech America attempted to generate a dollar figure of the size of the cybersecurity market as part of its overall market projections in 2011, but declined to repeat the effort in 2012 due to the difficulty of defining the space. So
it was a mistake on my part to put that in there.
So this is a big quantification problem, not just for the companies themselves, but for the broader sector, it sounds like.
It is. It's harder and harder to find the dollars, but there's a viable reason for at least some of that not being as visible anymore. It's because cyber used to be something that was discussed after the fact, and what the term that you hear a lot is it's baked in mm-hmm. now. And so the dollars are now built into the program. When you buy hardware or software or services, there's an expectation that all of those things are going to come with some security parameters and security capabilities. And so it's harder to find it and single it out that way.
There's a quote in this story from Harry Radigy, from the formerly head of DISA, commander of DISA, and now with Deloitte. And he essentially compares this to the dot-com era, where you had some companies that came in and flopped and they were gone. You had some companies that came in and did well and continued to succeed. Will we see, do you think, I'll start with you, Alan, will we see kind of a washout where some companies will be gone, but some will continue to succeed in this area, and then smaller companies will come behind them? Is this going to be kind of a vibrant thing? thing for years to come with some churn, or is this maybe kind of a one wave, and once people figure out what cyber really means, what they need, and so on, then we see a core of players that remain?
I think we're at the very early stages of understanding what the cyber market is going to be in the federal government. What happens with the implementation of the executive order, what happens with any legislation that might arise, what happens with how agencies approach the cyber marketplace, how much of it is embedded in existing work, how much of it is bolted on. I think we're at the early stages of that, and that will mean that some of the early high flyers are going to fall. They're going to flame out. They won't be able to sustain a marketplace, and there'll be a wave of new companies that aren't in this marketplace yet. I'm hoping they'll join Professional Services Council. That'll be a good investment for them, but I don't think we know the size.
You worked the plug in very nicely. I like that. I noticed it and enjoyed it.
Almost as many times as Bubble.
Do you think this market will be as fluid, more fluid, less fluid than other sectors, Trey, or the broader market as a whole?
I actually don't know that I agree with the concept and the story. I think what we're seeing, certainly on the defense side, is that cyber has emerged as a domain that is on par with air, sea, and land, mm-hmm. and space. And I think you're going to see a continued emphasis, both from a national security perspective, to develop and implement capabilities in that new domain or that emerging domain. And then there's going to be on the civilian side, I think the defensive posture will be more important. And the challenge that companies and the government are going to continue to face, and the reason why I think there perhaps is some sustained robustness to this market, is because the threat always evolves. What is a vulnerability today, we fix, and there's a new one tomorrow. And so until we get ahead of the adversaries in this realm and figure out what is the next threat and cut it off before they can take advantage of it, there will always be business here.
So it sounds to me like as you're approaching the premise of this piece, which is linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, you're just looking at it from kind of a different point on the compass, where what we think of today as cybersecurity and the capability that's required may not be the way that we think of cybersecurity and the capability of it 6 months from now or 2 years from now or 5 years from now. Is that
correct?
And
the companies that can keep up with that change mm-hmm. are the ones that will succeed, and ones that may not be able to keep up may see decline. But I think that the business will remain.
Alan, do you see that churn in the cybersecurity world being heavier, lighter, or about the same as the rest of the market?
It will be heavier because of the dynamic. Certainly in the next couple of years, as the market itself sorts out, as the government's own requirements get sorted out, how far we move towards common standards, how far we move from defensive into offensive capabilities, the role of Homeland Security versus the Defense Department, all of these things are going to be significant impacts on the market. Just haven't seen them yet.
Alan Shvatkin's second most important federal news story of the week is from Defense News, and you can read it linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The headline is Cybersecurity Bubble Bursting for U.S. Contractors. When we come back on the Federal News Countdown, the most important federal news story of the week is selected by Trey Hodgkins and Alan Shvatkin. This is the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Industry and acquisition. One doesn't exist without the other. Get the latest on how the two come together on Federal News Radio. Thursday mornings at 11, listen for Amtower Off Center, a uniquely sideways view of B to G from the marketing perspective. Thursday afternoons at 2, tune into Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron for all things procurement. And Thursdays at 3, join in-depth host Francis Rose for industry chatter about policy, regulations, and trends. Acquisition and Industry, Thursday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected by my guests on the countdown today, Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Trey Hodgkins of Tech America, and we are up to
number one.
Trey Hodgkin's most important federal news story of the week is from Aviation Week and Space Technology, and the headline is Slaughterhouse 5. If sequestration can rewrite U.S. strategy, it's time to kill sacred cows in industrial policy. And this is a pretty ambitious piece, and I wondered what your takeaway was, why you positioned this as number one this week, Trey.
Well, because I think that, number one, they raised some very interesting things that are worthy of a conversation in and of themselves, lifting the ban on top-tier contractor consolidation, drop 8A goals for small and disadvantaged defense contracting, drop the 50-50 rule for depot maintenance, stop stalling and winning technology winners and losers, and fine those who lose government GAO protests. Those have all been conversations that have been going on, some of them for decades. I think the reason that the article struck me is that, it is time to have a conversation about an industrial policy. I think from many in industry that the government has, if it had one, it's certainly lost track of what its industrial policy is. And we see a variety of different initiatives across the government that don't seem to take into account what is the impact on the industrial base. And so we have heard from our members, as I'm sure Alan and others have heard, is that there is an ever-increasing chorus of people who are saying, stop the madness. We've got to find ways to make this a marketplace that is viable and that, we have a partnership here where we're working to achieve the government mission. And I think a lot of companies are getting the sense that that is lost or certainly being eroded significantly.
Now, Alan, to be fair, if somebody looks at the earnings results from the companies that do business in this space, and a lot of them are your members, it's hard to say this space is becoming not viable for some of these companies. I mean, these companies continue to make money in pretty decent quantities.
Many of them do. But there's also a declining share of companies that are able to remain viable in the space. So companies who are willing to invest the time and the resources, and they're considerable, as Trey alluded to, can do okay. And the old saw, how do you make a fortune and start with a larger fortune?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what we see here. We're going to talk a lot with the Defense Department and other agencies about some of their economic policy, some of the attention to the industrial base. So while I have some real concerns about the specific recommendations here, the attention to the industrial base and what it takes to have a vibrant marketplace and a vibrant industrial base, competitive, able to attract the kind of talent is necessary, is absolutely right.
Bill Lynn has been on this program talking about shaping the defense industrial base both before he left DOD and afterwards. Is there any kind of apprehension or queasiness about that idea, or are the companies that deal in that space comfortable with the idea of DOD making specific policies essentially to manage how that market looks?
I don't think the department is doing much to pick winners and losers. There is a good amount of work that's been done on the analytics. To their credit, the office in DOD, Brett Lambert, I think you've had him on your show, who's talked about his S2T2, his sector-by-sector review, tier-by-tier, has looked pretty extensively at how the Defense Department is utilizing and where it's placing its critical resources and managing those limited amount of resources. That makes some sense. You want to make sure you protect your critical suppliers. But it's not quite the industrial base management that many have feared.
Do you see the same thing, Trey?
Well, I agree with Alan. Brett's done a really good job there trying to develop a more robust policy and certainly been a great sounding board for industry and our perspectives. I think the change we've seen, though, is that a lot of the member companies in my membership base are very strongly commercial in nature. They want to play in the public sector, and they don't necessarily fit that old DOD, at least, industrial-based mold. And so I don't know that we have kept pace with the changes in the companies in the industrial base and the kinds of offerings that they provide, and the transactions they're looking for when they deal with the government. And that's, I think, what would probably be at the heart of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. You said, Alan, you don't agree with these policies necessarily, the ones that are specified in this piece. Trey, you didn't comment necessarily on each of these individually, but as far as a broader conversation, is there room, is there time to have this kinds of conversation now, or is this maybe the best opportunity, do you think, as Michael Bruno's writing here, to do this kind of thing? I mean, it seems to me that this is a different track than the budget track.
Well, the austerity is a real challenge, but it also creates the real opportunity. I mean, we are just at the very beginning end of a different environment. Budget austerity is going to be with us for the next decade, and now's the right time to begin that conversation. If we wait, I'm concerned that either the government will lose out on access to talent or the industry will decide what talent is available to the government. Mm-hmm. Both of those decisions would be a mistake.
And I would make the same point about technologies and the commercial companies that are providing them. You know, a lot of commercial companies look at the marketplace and they look at all the government unique requirements they would face entering the market as a small business. It's very challenging to have the resources to get in the market and compete and then stay in the marketplace. And I think that's part of the conversation that struck me with this article is it is a conversation we need to be having. How do we reasonably and efficiently move forward to make sure the government can continue to meet the mission?
Trey Hodgkin's most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdowns from Aviation Week and Space Technology, Michael Bruno's piece titled Slaughterhouse-5, If Sequestration Can Rewrite U.S. Strategy, It's Time to Kill Sacred Cows in Industrial Policy. And you can read more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We've got Alan Shvatkin's most important federal news story of the week to wrap up the Federal News Countdown in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/term life to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Here's Anil Carmel, Deputy Chief Technology Officer, National Nuclear Security Administration, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility and Government, sponsored by Citrix.
IT becomes the enabler to deliver these capabilities to those constituents, laying down that foundation of innovation, providing that perfect intersection between cloud and mobility to where the user now doesn't have to worry about where do I go to get stuff.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
More and more these days, your job takes you out from behind your desk, whether it be to go across the street or across the country. And that makes computing mobility a necessity, not a luxury. As a leading provider of mobile work-style solutions, Citrix helps employees to work, meet, and collaborate anywhere on the latest devices as easily as they would in their own office, simply and securely. With computing mobility powered by Citrix, you can work with the people, data, and apps you want anytime, anywhere, on any device. To learn more about Citrix mobility solutions, visit today at Citrix.com.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one.
Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stump. Durant.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
Really, one website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live event versus webcast, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Alan Shvatkin on the Federal News Countdown, is from Politico. The headline is Small Defense Contractors Bearing the Brunt of Cuts. And Alan, this story's lead says, sequestration is here and the defense industry is reeling, particularly the little guy. Now, one of the things that we heard about sequestration that wasn't a nightmare scenario was this is going to take longer to affect the contractors than it will the federal employees themselves. And here again, you've chosen a story that's kind of exactly the opposite of what the general consensus seemed to be.
Well, the flexibility, the reason I picked it is it had the combination of sequestration, industrial base, and if I could find bubble, it would really really be done it for us. But this is a really another one of those unintended consequences. The real thought process behind sequestration is looking at major programs and impact on the federal workforce. Absolutely true. But the impact, if some of the major contractors get a cold, these guys have pneumonia because they're smaller, they have less flexibility, fewer contracts to rely on. I know both Mark Draver and Adele Pierce, who were referenced in the story, I know from the work that we do with our small business companies and the membership, they're very concerned about the lack of information flow. And so when the sequestration, if it hits them, it will be binary. They may be in or they'll be out. They won't have the flexibility to retool or to adjust the contracts. So we've been very pleased to see DOD and the other federal agencies finally agreeing to go talk to industry to try to find ways to reduce and minimize the impact. But this story really hit on all three of those, the sequestration, the unintended impacts, and just what we were talking about on industrial base issues.
What do you think are the odds that this is really going to wind up having people either in or out, Trey? Is it that stark to you also?
I think it is. I think that the environment has changed. I think the changes in many ways are certainly long-term, if not permanent, for the foreseeable future at least. And the small businesses have the challenge of trying to navigate the marketplace I was talking about in the last story. And when you layer on that, the challenges they'll face in just simply keeping their contract. And as Alan and I both talked in other places and you have on the show, the impacts of this sort won't necessarily be this week or next week. It's going to be as these contracts come up for renewal. These may be suppliers to a larger prime whose contract is going to get adjusted. And so it's going to have a ripple effect, and I think it's going to be an extended effect versus one that is sort of guillotine in effect.
Now, the argument that I'm starting to hear in respect to this situation is the bottom line is the government doesn't have enough money to continue to spend at the rate that it used to spend. And these situations are unfortunate, but if we don't have that much to spend, somebody's going to get shut out. Somebody's not going to get the revenue that they've been getting in the past. And it's unfortunate. It's sad, but it's just the way that it is.
Well, it certainly, there's a risk that somebody's going to get shut out. This is not an entitlements program. There's no right to government contracts. You have to earn that. But it's based on a false assumption that the current system needs every dollar that it now has. And there's lots of attention to efficiency and effectiveness discussions. We know the acquisition system takes too long, costs too much. The members that Trey and I have, the commercial companies who want to do business, many of them are unwilling to spend the money for unnecessary or excessive compliance responsibilities. So how do we draw cost out of the system? A very important conversation. We hope to engage in that in a big way in the next couple of weeks through work we're doing at the Professional Services Council. But we shouldn't presume that simply because there's not enough dollars means we have to jettison companies or capabilities.
Now, I thought it was interesting also that we got about about 5/6 of the way through this story about how terrible this was going to be for small business contractors. And then this story says, I guarantee, this is a quote from, you mentioned, you know, Mark Drever, Alan. I guarantee you that some firms will go out of business as a result of sequestration. That's a fact. But even with all the cuts, he added, defense is still good business. And that's another element that I'm starting to hear a lot from Congress. Hey, the federal government's still going to spend a lot of money. And clever companies that do business well and that can be agile and respond to the needs of these agencies are still going to be profitable, still going to make some money, and they're still going to be able to get business from the government.
This goes back to a point we talked about earlier where agencies have not had the clarity about their funding and then the ability to manage that funding. And so what's made FY13 so terrible is the complete lack of that, and you layer on top of that the cuts from sequestration, the inability of the agencies to adjust and manage their funding. I think when we see 14, you'll have a little better situation because the agencies should expect, if things proceed the way they're supposed to, they will be able to manage their funding, and then companies can compete in that environment in a more stable situation.
We're going to do something on this week's program that I don't think has ever happened before when Alan Shpotkin's on the show, and that is somebody else gets the last word, Trey. So you get the last word. Alan, it's great to see you as always. You're trying really hard to jump in. It's great to have you on, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, Trey, for being here also. Alan Shpotkin's most important federal news story of the week is from Politico. The headline is Small Defense Contractors Bearing the Brunt of Cuts. All of our stories on this week's countdown will be posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today, along with the audio of our countdown show. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.